We'll get the disclaimer over and we can get on with World Watchers. 1 minute late, but that's okay. That's okay. You don't mind, do you? And this is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 620 and it's October the 24th, 1983. I got a call just before the World Watchers began from the talk show. Would I talk about Jessica Savage? Of course I'll talk about Jessica Savage. I can't think of any woman who has done so much in the last year. She's done a lot. I have a close friend who thinks she didn't do a lot. She doesn't forgive her for not talking about the drug connections when she did the program on Roberta Calvi, leaving out the drug connections. And I think there's a good point there, but the British Broadcasting did the story of the murder of Roberta Calvi, and that was a very flagrant, outright murder that at the time they were calling a suicide. And I thought it was great that she had that broadcast on her program. One of the first broadcasts that she had that was very controversial. That was about the football league and Mr. Rosenblum and the death in Miami. She suggested he was murdered. That was the first broadcast that she had on her Nightline program, and that was, I thought that was a lot of courage to get tangled in that can of worms down in Los Angeles with those particular people. There's a lot of high muscle down there, and she really got right into the scene. The football team was taken over by Georgia Frontier. She was a woman from Las Vegas, a showgirl, and her husband, Mr. Rosenblum, he was the owner of the Rams in Los Angeles, Carol Rosenblum, had a little dip in the Miami Ocean and disappeared and died, sort of like Whitney Young over in Africa at the time. There's a partnership of her Rams. She owns it, as I say, totally. And she moved out of the L.A. Coliseum and went into Anaheim and built up this huge development and 90 acres there. And right after that time, Rosenblum Brown, swimming, that was in 1979, rather. And she's the principal heir of the whole team and led the Rams to Anaheim and moved in with Gene Autry. There was a big shift of power there, and the circumstances of his death were mysterious, and she talked about that. Jessica Savage did the show, as I say, on the Vatican and Roberta Calvi, which was I thought was a good program, even though it didn't have the drugs. It showed the pathetic death in that little Chelsea hotel in London and how he really was cornered like a dog. God's banker, richest religious institution in the world, and the head of the entire Bank of Italy left dangling off that bridge in London. So she did a program then. She did one on Klaus Barbie, and then I got a telephone call from Ray Fabrizio today. I forgot about the time when John Hinckley was shooting at Ronald Reagan in front of the Hilton Hotel, and there were other shots or backup shots. The location of Hinckley was not consistent with the bullet wounds in the president, and they talked about a ricochet, and that was the time where she insisted and said that there was a Secret Service man just as on the grassy knoll that she saw him by the overhang shoot a weapon. And this is on videotape that there was a Secret Service man, a second gun there in front of the hotel. And she said that, and she's carried on with her other programs. So that's at least four things that she stuck her neck out or tried to expose. I got a call from John Judge in Philadelphia today, and he explained that where she drowned was in New Hope, Pennsylvania. It's sort of like Chappaquiddick, a little dusty road, a little turn in the road, and a little bit of town, the tide was out, and she and a friend were drowned in the car. And there aren't that many news men or women, people with courage. They're just not around. And at a local level, I'm doing it. At a national level, she was doing it. You know, Barbara Walters doesn't get shot, or David Hartman, or any of those jokers, you know, not shot or drowned. They live to their ripe old ages, and the controversial ones have these early demises, and then everyone can have a good laugh and say, I guess you're paranoid. Well, that's too bad. There was a shootout here on the peninsula that didn't make me very happy. It was at K-Wave, where a gunman came in, a 41-year-old man by the name of Norbert Schenk, S-C-H-E-N-K. That's a nice German name. He was lived in Hawaii. He was a cab driver in Hawaii, but he kept hearing voices that told him to come to Monterey Peninsula to K-Wave. And he took a 21-gauge shotgun and made 55 rounds and broke up, shot the place down. The disc jockey wasn't hurt, Sandy Meester. She's only been up for 3 weeks from Whittier, from down San Clemente. Is her home base, and he let her off. He told her to go away. He didn't want to hurt her, but he shot 55 rounds and $200,000 in damage at the radio station, and he was telephonically in some way controlled. He was being told that, and there was a woman, he said, who communicated with him in his taxi, who ruined his business and evidently came here, and he was in front of the station for a few days with allegedly for wanting a job. And one of the articles in the paper says radio exterminator. He wanted or passed himself off as an exterminator. It reminded me of Adolf Hitler's Zyklon B that was used for extermination. It was for rats and infestations of animals. Well, he's locked up, but here's a situation where a person just shoots their way into a radio station. I hope that they didn't tell him over in Hawaii it was K-Wave, but he picked Kazoo, and he picked K-Wave. I hope he knew what he was doing and went to K-Wave and didn't show up at Kazoo tonight. It's a little bit scary. I don't like this kind of thing, and you're really vulnerable to the powers that be that are out there that are training these zombies. And tonight on the news, they were discussing the affair in Lebanon and the two cars that plowed in and all the American Marines that died. And it was McNeil Lehrer, the lady was saying, now, can you tell me what was in the minds of those two people at the time they died? And the guest was saying, well, in the Middle East, they're trained for these suicide squads. Well, they're trained in the United States, too, by the Defense Department. And they have hospitals in Japan, Hawaii, and United States, all over Italy, where they do experimentations to teach people to die and to kill themselves. And this isn't some great mystery overseas or in the Middle East. It happens all the time. And she couldn't understand what was in their mind when they went into that building. They gave up their mind a long time ago. Now, there's one article or two or three pertaining to the cost of war that grabbed me this week. One was in the San Francisco Chronicle. It's a new report put out by the Arms Control Association and the Rockefeller Foundation. So you would imagine it would be very conservative on these figures. But this is what the report was: $1.3 million for military purposes every single minute. I've been on the air 9 minutes. They spent $9 million, $10 million in that amount of time. $1.3 million every minute. 30 children die for want of food and vaccines, inexpensive vaccines. There are a stockpile of 50,000 nuclear weapons. 450 million in the people in the world are starving today, and 100 million acres of cropland were put out of production. The United States government paid them not to grow anything, 100 million, while 450 million in the world are starving. When Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, came to this country, his family had published a book with their goals for the end of World War II, and one of them was to mark off the Ukraine and starve 40 million people and make 50 million slaves. Well, 40 isn't anything in the Nazi mentality. Right now there's 450 million, and there's 1 billion people living under military-controlled governments. That's not counting things like Israel that they call democracy. 1 billion people, and 9 million civilians have been killed in war since Hiroshima. 9 million, and 25 million men are under arms. You like those figures? Also, in the Wall Street Journal the same week, the president, Ronald Reagan, is planning to raise defense spending 22%. Right now, $875 every year for each man, woman, and child is given to the military. And Ronald Reagan wants to raise that 22% in the defense spending. And then another story, the arms are gaining support in Congress as spending grows, says Senator John Tower. The arms program has created a $1.6 trillion rearmament program. Can you imagine? The budget for 1984 is $260 billion, but it'll be closer to $275 billion because you have to take into account inflation. And then finally, on that subject, the Los Angeles Herald had a story this week Nuclear war in 1988. We'll have the first strike capability. So what will the Russians do? It's written by Robert Aldrich, called The Pentagon Strategy, First Strike. And then I have a postcard I mail out to people, and this is what it says on the cover. The money required to provide adequate food, water, education, health, and housing for everyone in the world has been estimated at $17 billion in 1 year, about as much as the world spends on arms every 2 weeks. So we were talking a little bit earlier before World Watches began about insanity or crazy people. And I think everybody who simply takes this is totally crazy if you're not yelling, we've had enough already. The San Francisco Examiner had an article that the convention center in Dallas is getting ready for the exciting ceremonies to have Ronald Reagan gloriously arrive and be nominated as President of the United States. How Dallas outstrips San Francisco in fervor for convention. It says, Dallas wants to shake the image by the violence of the Kennedy assassination and also the movie Dallas, and they are waiting for the triumphal renomination of President Reagan. Not when the Vicky Morgan tapes get out. I doubt if he'll have a triumphal renomination when those things begin to be distributed. Down in the Philippines, they're looking for a leader. The Los Angeles Times has a story. Fragmented anti-Marcos forces look for a leader. The same thing happened in every country where a military dictatorship was installed and the president was killed, whether it was in Brazil or Argentina, the Philippines, or South Korea, or the United States. Once John Kennedy was murdered, and he wasn't perfect, but once he was murdered, the system and the way the elections were determined were such that the power structure made sure that they didn't lose. They would have the person they want and make sure that the divisions between the weaker parties would break them apart. Look what's happening to the Democratic Party now. That's a total washout. You get Jesse Jackson and George McGovern and Eugene McCarthy and John Anderson, a bunch of traveling clowns. And if you rub their heads together, you wouldn't get one idea. And Fritz Mondale, just a disgusting bunch of people. And this country's been so fractured, it never really will get together until somebody decides that they're tired of this, the way it's running right now. I still think opening up these crimes, I've always thought that way is the only way to get out those people out, because it could be proven that they were involved with illegal acts. The Village Voice has an article, The Spy Who Came Down on the Freeze. This is the story of John Reese, and there's a picture of him with Nancy Reagan, holding hands with Nancy Reagan and Linda Gould, who is the director of Western Goals at the present time. It was written by Seth Rosenfield and mailed out to me by a World Watcher. It's August 16th, 1983. And his quotation of John Reese, certainly while he was campaigning and in the years before he was president, he had my material and he made use of my material in his radio programs. That goes back to when he was governor of California. Now, John Reese worked for Reagan when he was a governor. He worked for Larry McDonald when he was killed. The computer that Larry McDonald had that goes into the police department covers some of the dirt that John Reese and Jerry Ducota were doing in those years. And that was why it was so essential to hush up this case. They've now granted immunity to Linda Gould from Western Goals and Jay Paul from the police department, and the powers that be are going to try and cover this case up, and I want to do more about that on the second half of the program this evening. John Reese bragged about his writing for various magazines that the president reads and his material in Reader's Digest, and it also goes on to say that Western Goals is closely associated to Stern magazine and to members of the German-based Western Goals have been linked both to the CIA and the equivalent of the CIA, the BND, which is the Reinhardt-Gehlen operation. And there are Nazis on the board of Western Goals. There's Mr. Milligan on the board, who's on the board of W.R. Grayson Companies with Western Goals. There are no Nazis, Luftwaffe pilot of Hitler that I mentioned last week, and Mr. Wigner, the Nazi from the Atomic Energy Commission, who's at Western Goals, and there are links to the BND and the intelligence system. So what goes from your local police department, it isn't just LA, it's everywhere. When it goes into their machines, then when you travel or take a trip, they know your preferences, your sexual preferences, where you're going to travel, what you're going to do. Western Goals is the repository for California, probably for the Southern California, there may be one up north too. They only surfaced because of a lawsuit going on now about files being missing from the police department, ending up with Western Goals. But this article says goes back to the early days when Reagan was the governor and to the Gehlen operation in Germany, which I've mentioned before. I read in the paper that the investigation of John Belushi has taken a turn where Bob Woodward has been asked to write a book about Belushi's death. Jackie Jacqueline, the widow of John Belushi, asked him to do that. I think Jackie shouldn't get her hopes up too high because John Woodward is not good at investigating deaths. The LAPD was very much a Watergate, and he did not talk about Tackwood or Martin or White, even though he had the information. And he covered and protected the L.A. Police Department at the time of Watergate when he wrote All the President's Men. He's not into investigating assassinations or conspiracies. He knows nothing about the LAPD or Daryl Gates or where the conspiracy lies, so therefore he can't possibly get the essence. And he'll write a book, but she's hired him. I don't know why. These people have some inside knowledge about a very special person or somebody that's murdered like this. Why they go to what are really the name people who cover up the murders. He covered up all the main Watergate murders, the deaths of Lou Russell and Martha Mitchell and Dorothy Hunt's plane crash and Murray Chotiner and Beverly Kay at the White House and 30 of them all together. He never wrote a book or cared at all about them. But he's going to do that. There also is a story in the newspaper this last Sunday, not a story, a little item, that Ronald Reagan Jr. is writing material, trying to write a book, and that he goes to the William Morris Agency. Now, William Morris is the agency that represents Ronald Reagan, his father, and Alfred Bloomingdale, Jerry Ford, Alexander Haig, and Henry Kissinger, all the crowd down there. And it's the agency where Marvin Pancos worked. The latest story is that Marvin Pancos did not kill Vicki Borgen with the baseball bat. The story is that there's no fingerprints on the bat or anywhere just to prove that he did it. There was somebody in the closet, and they now know in L.A. who was in the closet, and that's the person who actually did the murder. So now we'll find out who silenced Vicki Borgen and why they hid it so long. But that person is recognized and identified by a few people. So that's what's going on in L.A. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. Alfred Bloomingdale made a lot of contacts in his life in Hollywood. There's a book coming out about Alfie by Sheldon Davis. He claims that Alfie had a really heavy sex life. He was completely consumed with women and spent $500,000 a year on his prostitutes and had every hooker in town. He was known that he had one thing on his mind, one consuming thing, and that was sex. That's interesting because when Ronald Reagan put him on the Intelligence Advisory Board, and I mentioned that before, it seems to me that he would have a little more discretion than a man who's picking up girls off the street from right and left. And on the board is Admiral Moore, who is with Western Goals, Larry McDonald firm of military and so forth. And you'd think they'd be more particular. Another person on the board of Western Goals who's been involved in some of this scandal through the back door, but certainly prominent, is Edward Bennett Williams. No, he's with the Intelligence Advisory Board, not Western Goals. Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney. He represented John Hinckley Jr., and there's a picture of him in the paper, the Washington Times this week. Orioles owner Edward Bennett Williams sitting with President Ronald Reagan in the owner's box in the Baltimore Memorial Stadium. They're both very happy to be there. Reagan, I'm sure, must be so heavily blackmailed to allow himself to be with the man who got John Hinckley off. Everyone who ever shot a water pistol at Ronald Reagan is still in prison, and we'd get 20 to 40 years. So here's a man that really did almost kill him, and if you can call him a man, and affected Mr. Brady's life, so and two other people, and Ronald Reagan is going with Edward Bennett Williams to the ballgame. I don't say that these people shouldn't be represented, but they should. But he got him off instead of locking him up forever. If he locked him up forever and threw away the key, I'd go out and celebrate, but he didn't. But Reagan is out there at the ballgame with them. And as I mentioned once before, Nancy was at a party with them. So they don't seem to mind the Hinckleys or any of that stuff. I can't figure these people out, but that's the way their head goes, and that's the way they operate. Now, there's another story that came from back east, from World Watcher, the one that sent me the one on John Reese, on Larry McDonald, Western Goals, and public broadcasting. The President of the United States was to make an appointment for one of the heads of public broadcasting, and he wanted Paul Harvey. Well, Paul Harvey is so conservative that he turned it down. He said that he gets money from the MacArthur Foundation, other foundations, and that he didn't really need it. He said they'd be better off having Helen Marie Taylor, a former Reagan nominee for public broadcasting. Well, Helen Marie Taylor is she's vice chairman of Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum, which is extreme right-wing group, and of course they're violently opposed to abortions. And she's a member of the board of Western Goals, of Larry McDonald's Western Goals, this Ms. Taylor, this conservative woman who had been in charge of public broadcasting. And the article goes on to say that how right-wing she is and the thing that she has done to maintain her conservative position. And Helen Marie Taylor's on the board of Western Goals. She didn't, or as yet hasn't passed as head of the Western Goals. She's passed their test, but not the public broadcasting. So public broadcasting would lose a lot in its freedom of speech when you get a woman like this who is directly piped into computers that go over to Nazi Germany, to the Galen operation, to Roy Cohn, and to Edward Teller, just being at the station where there's a lot of anti-war and anti-abortion petitions. It'd be really weird to have this woman in charge of public broadcasting, but that's what the president wants, and he makes one weird appointment after the other. I just can't understand. I understand it, but it makes me sick. Now, the latest trick that the president tried to do, he's pushing through, is the appointment of somebody to recognize the Vatican as against all other churches. This was in the Washington Times, the D.C. Times, and it said the Congress was upset because through the Senate, President Reagan pushed through a bill that would recognize the Vatican and have diplomatic ties with the Vatican. This is at a time when the Vatican was arrested, with Paul Marcinkus has been arrested but won't accept the petition. He's hiding. When two of their bankers have been arrested, when judges have been killed, when their money is tied up in these dummy fronts that have not yet been identified, when the arrest took place at Stibam in Milan with Henry Arsan and the drug dealers, it was the largest operation of narcotics and weapons bought from America and elsewhere in the world, right under the nose of the Vatican. And with all this going on in Herman Apps, the head of the Deutsche Bank, a man that worked with John McCloy and in America and I.G. Farben, and was on the board of I.G. Farben running the bank, at that time, Ronald Reagan wants to the United States to recognize and have like an embassy with the Vatican, which means that all that hidden money and all the Jesuit priests that are used not for liberal causes but for safe houses for various agents and so forth could be combined with the United States Defense and CIA. Now, the congressman who pushed this through the Senate and cleared the Senate September 22nd was Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana. I mentioned Lugar June 6, 1983, just a few months ago, program number 600, because he's the fellow that was with the Pope, that went to see the Pope with five other senators to talk about human rights. And he's the fellow who was exposed in 1976 as being a link to secret Swiss bank accounts funding Richard Nixon for his election for the GOP. And the man who was transmitting the money was Horia Sima, S-I-M-A, the fugitive Nazi war criminal. He's living in Spain. He's wanted in other countries. The powers that be don't want him. So Lugar not only takes a trip with five other congressmen to see the Pope, and I'm sure that's when the Pope twisted his wrist, that they should have an envoy directly to Congress and to cabinet level, because they can't get out. They can't get out because they'll be arrested. But here is a Nazi running the Vatican Bank, Herman Apps. Here are Nazis in Spain that work directly with Senator Lugar. There's Senator Lugar going back and forth to the Vatican and then quietly sneaking this bill on through the Senate and getting it out so that diplomatic ties would be renewed with the Vatican. And not renewed, they were never allowed. There was a law that they shouldn't be allowed, and he tried to change the waiver. There's been a policy going a long way back in our Constitution, the fundamental change of keeping religion and church separate, and he wants to get that changed. It would repeal the 1867 statute prohibiting the spending of dollars for a diplomatic mission to the Vatican, and he's trying to get that cleared. There's a TV view with, I don't know if any of you saw Kitty Kelly, the woman who's writing about Jerry Frank Sinatra, the man who's threatened to stop her book before it starts. An interesting point that she makes that I like. She said, they asked her, why are you making the book about Frank Sinatra if he doesn't want it? And she said, little by little, the country becomes more like the people we admire. And that is terrifying when I look at the faces, the Henry Kissinger and the Fritz Kramers, the Daniel Grahams, particularly Kissinger everywhere, trying to build him up for the next president and the social butterfly again, or Nancy and Ronnie and their Frank Sinatra and the beautiful people image they projected when they're in all kinds of trouble, Johnny Carson and all of them. And the Hinckley family and all of the gay, happy little family from the suburbs of Dallas that moves up to Oklahoma. So she's afraid, she says, that we'll become like those people. We admire them. We become like them. So I guess she wants to knock this image out and get some decent people that she can emulate or like. So Kitty Kelly said, little by little, the country becomes more like the people we admire. The Washington Post has an article, The Reagan-O'Neill Understanding. This is by David Browder. It may be a fine arrangement for them, but what about the country? And that's what I tried to say last week to the righteous members of the House of Representatives or Congress, the Senate, who put down magazines like Hustler or Girly Magazines or whatever it is, that they try to act so pure. And yet I remember that Mr. O'Neill's name came out at the time of the Korea Gate hearings. And ever since then, he's been more Republican than Democrat or totally without any vocal cords. So now attention's being called to it, at least. There was an article October the 7th of O'Neill with Tip O'Neill with Ronald Reagan, and they're so happy. They both know something about each other, and I imagine they're two of the most heavily blackmailed men in Washington, D.C., if you can call them men. So they're now editorials and large half-page articles. It's a fine arrangement for them, but what about the country? I also pulled out one of the articles that was published at the time of Watergate by the New York Times, August the 1st, 1973, and it tells about Mr. Tony Ulasewicz that the Senate Watergate hearings tried to make out as being very funny or humorous. And he told how he tried to get information, particularly from girls that were on the island at Chappaquiddick with Ted Kennedy. He had a scheme that involved hiring a good-looking man to seduce the women in the apartment, have pictures taken secretly, then blackmail the women into revealing details about Miss Kopechne and the party that took place before the accident. Ulasewicz was up there, and he ran houses with these kinds of cameras going in New York City. You never hear anything about him or the girls that were at Chappaquiddick, but blackmail is the name of the game, and that's what goes on in Washington a lot of the time. I pulled out, in terms of blackmail, another article that was about John Kennedy being fixed up with Inga Arvid. She was a Nazi, known Nazi spy, moved to the highest echelons with Edward VIII, and she was with Hermann Göring and all the most social of the Nazi crowd. And she came to the United States in 1942. She was sort of bedding around with John Kennedy. And I heard the stories of activities before, and this story says eventually her editor told the FBI of the suspicion she was a spy, according to Parmet, and President Roosevelt ordered the FBI to bug Kennedy's hotel room to see whether she was getting any information from the young naval officer. J. Edgar Hoover kept the recordings of the hotel room liaison and was in a key position to blackmail Kennedy from 1942 until he was assassinated in Dallas 23 years later. So that on the excuse that one Nazi spy had been sent to him, and at this time, J. Edgar Hoover, up to the war when it broke out, was vice president of Interpol, Hitler's Nazi police. And then eventually this information goes back to the Interpol computers. So Inga Arvid left John Kennedy. They had a little liaison, but from then on, he could bug him for the remainder of his life and get the technique going and say, well, I had to do it because I suspected. And that's what happened to John Kennedy. Yeah, this Tony Lasswitz was presented as a comedian. I never thought he was funny at all. And, in fact, I thought he was pathetic. There's a tape that a listener from World Watchers sent me by General Daniel Graham on his High Frontier story. And in it, he tells how he puts down President Reagan, and as much as says he doesn't really know anything, but he says he's telling Ronald Reagan what he wants in space in terms of weapons. He says, because after all, Reagan is only an actor. So the people behind the scene, the Fritz Kramers and the Daniel Grahams, really run the actors. And he said it was June 1983 when he said Reagan is only an actor. So that's the state of mind of Graham and Fritz Kramer and these people. And if he does what they want, he'll be a good actor. And he is a good actor. You have to say that when he's on TV, particularly when people die, one or more, he really is great at that stuff. Now we're going to take a 1-minute break here.